May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts lead us to love and justice. Amen. Please be seated. Well, hi, everyone.
Hello.
Can you hear me okay? Good? All right. I'm happy to be with you this morning. I've worshipped here a couple times, not that often, over the course of the years that I've been in the Synod office. But this is my first time preaching here, so I'm grateful to Alan for the invitation while he's away. It was one of these odd things. I was thinking to myself sitting in my office, man, it's been a while since I've been in a parish and since I've been in a pulpit. I'd like to do that one of these times. And then the next day, I get this note from Alan saying, hey. So, you know, God certainly has a sense of humor sometimes with the way that these things go. I also want to thank Mark for his leadership officiating the services this week and next. Mark is one of the 50-some lay people who've been commissioned to lead liturgies of the word over the last couple years in our diocese. And I think it's important, not only does it represent the broadening of our options as a community for worship, but it's also a key component in equipping and embodying the whole ministry of all the baptized. And as a layperson myself, I can say with conviction that our church needs all orders of ministry, ordained and not, to discern their gifts and be ministered in the way that we are so called. I think it's going to really take us all to live collectively into the future that God is calling us to, and I encourage each of you on that journey. So before I kind of get into what I've prepared today, I want to take a moment just to recognize that there's a lot going on in the world, that our minds are maybe full and that our hearts are maybe heavy. We're processing the election of our neighbors to the south, fearing maybe, wondering what the implications of that might be. Tomorrow's also Remembrance Day, so we're kind of holding some of that, thinking of how we will observe the important civic occasion, and also mourning the wars that are ongoing and the horrors that are happening daily out there. So there's a lot on our minds. So let's just take a minute to gather ourselves and be in collective stillness, taking a couple breaths and being here together. So last weekend, we had our diocesan synod, and I know there was some of you in the room that were there. Lisa was there, Dave was there. And one of the things that we did was pass an entirely new set of canons and regulations. Very exciting stuff. But we were finished by noon, so that's also, I think, probably the first time in the diocese that that's happened. There are synods done by lunch. One of the things that was a highlight for me, though, was our guest. We had Scott Sharman from the Diocese of Edmonton and the National Church. He is the animator for ecumenical and interfaith relations at the Anglican Church of Canada, and he came and shared some thoughts as we opened up our synod together. He encouraged us to think about synodality as a way of being more than just a meeting that we have every couple years. He reflected that synod is from the word synod has the root words for togetherness and also a road or a path. So together on the road, together on the path is within that word synod. So he was actually saying that it has more of a spiritual, almost a sacramental element to our being together, to sharing in collective discernment and embodying this way of being a church together on the path. And it actually takes that togetherness, that all of us participating in the conversation, that's gonna require what comes ahead. So he highlighted three characteristics of this, is that we are collegial, we are dialogical, and we are provisional. And I'm not gonna go into those, but his whole talk is gonna be posted on the next Faith Tides. So I encourage you to have a read, because it is
quite different. Also, at the opening of our synod, Lisa was commissioned as a canon, so that's pretty exciting.
And Lisa.
Yeah. in her ministry, and so that's great. So when I initially looked through the readings for today, the gospel stood out for me because it's a story that I've always liked. There are many Bible stories like that that evoke for me my childhood of hearing and understanding what that was like in my evangelical past. This is kind of the church that I grew up in. But I'll say to you that it was hard to turn down preaching Ruth because it's not so often you get a spicy story like that in the lectionary. Uncovering his feet is a bit of a euphemism, but we won't get into that today. So partly, the gospel passage, you have these fancy religious leaders, right, who display and do the things that they're supposed to do for almost self-serving accolades, and you have the poor woman who gives of what she has, and it's that meager gift which is highlighted by Jesus as being the truly valuable one. So growing up, we were not a wealthy family. We weren't quite poor, but we were careful. And because of that, I found it always easier to identify with the woman in this story. For me, I took that as a motivation to give of what I had, even though it wasn't much, and be confident that my offering was seen as acceptable and valuable in the eyes of God. So now, these many years later, I find myself in the Anglican tradition that loves to pull out the pomp and circumstance from time to time, as we did the opening of Synod. I had to wear this ridiculous outfit, but it was fun. And I find myself in a position of church leadership, church bureaucrat, in this position of trust, and have the means to live comfortably in this community. So, at very least, I now understand a little bit more about what the scribes might have been thinking and doing in this story that Jesus calls them out for. At least more than ever before, I understand a little bit of what they might be thinking. And even though we, as church broadly, and Anglican church specifically, have maybe lost some of our social legitimacy, most of it perhaps. And I don't think wearing our distinctive robes in the marketplace would garner us any favor these days. The temptation, though, that I think is present, is still present, that we do things for appearance's sake, or that we perform a duty, or on behalf of the role or the office, whether or not it's kind of tied with the kind of right kind of heart or the right kind of posture in the doing. And I don't think I am, so while I have this unique position in our church together, I don't think I'm alone in needing that reminder that is really the posture of the heart and the sincerity of the action that in part determines its value. So a plain reading of the text, we can see this interpretation that I've just presented, that the true value of a contribution, of a gift, or an action is about more than the monetary value, and that it needs to be connected with the right kind of posture. And by having that right posture, it grants it almost a kind of an ineffable weight, an eternal value. But if we take a step back, we try to see some of the themes that are happening in the whole story, we start to notice how Jesus was constantly involved in the project of justice, directly related to the poor in his midst. In his day, just like ours, society was polarized. There were those who had more than enough and those who didn't have enough at all. And throughout the biblical witness, especially in the gospel, we see this attention to the care and to the poor, not only individuals, but also to some of the structures that entrench the distance between those who have and those who don't. One theologian who spent his life working on this exact point was Gustavo Gutierrez. Does anyone know Gutierrez? Gutierrez is often called the father of liberation theology. He was a Peruvian minister and teacher that spent most of his life working on this approach to theology that centers the struggle of the poor. One of the things that liberation theology said is that God has a preferential option for the poor, and that unless our theologies, our practices, our communal life are attuned to and connected with the struggle of the poor in our places, then Gutierrez and a lot of liberation theology has a hard time acknowledging it as the gospel of Christ. Gutierrez has been on my mind because he died a few weeks ago, after a whole career of teaching and writing and serving as one of the leaders in this liberation theology, which has now spread all around the world and taken on flavors related to each individual context. But because of his death, as I was reading the scriptures this week, I was thinking about his work. How would he read this passage and approach it? So we have in our diocese many ministries across the diocese that work with the poor. The food bank at St. John the Divine down on Quadra Street is a good example. They do really good work. On Tuesdays and Fridays, they twice a month each, they offer the food bank. And in their lower lounge, they offer that space as a nighttime shelter every day right now. So it's good and important work. Loaves and Fishes of Ireland started in an Anglican parish and is now one of the largest food justice initiatives on the island. These ministries are important and they need to be supported and held up. I also see a lot of parishes who do service through donation, which certainly has its place, but it is a step removed from seeing or knowing our neighbors in a way that might change us or might shift how we understand and practice our faith. And partly, I think that's what we're being invited to in today's passage. Jesus invites us to change how we understand the simple act of donation based on the encounter with the poor woman, by how her life is on display and by the generosity and sacrifice that she makes for the community and in her faith. A number of years ago, I was able to conduct a research project on the experience of homelessness, where I used ethnographic methods to paint a picture to the public and to city council. This was while I was living in Red Deer in Alberta, for them to understand what it was like to get a picture, quite literally pictures of what homelessness was like in their community. And that summer project, I witnessed firsthand the generosity of the poor. They were generous in their time and conversations with me, helping me understand and give voice to their experiences. And they were generous to one another. Give easily, take easily seemed to be a bit of the way that it operates. There's a similar group in our city who's been gathering over the past year and a bit, trying to elevate the voice of people experiencing homelessness to help guide and design solutions and programs that might actually help with the crisis that we see in our city. They're called the Housing Justice Project. They have been housed at UVic and have been funded by the Vancouver Foundation. And they bring together people with lived experience of homelessness with other multidisciplinary experts who come together to find solutions of what might actually work and make sense from the ground up. On my way to the Senate office, to and from home every day, I cross Pandora. And so I understand a bit of the desire to keep some distance, especially when I'm walking with my four-year-old daughter. But I also know that some of the ideas that might work and might make sense on paper don't really work for people with complex needs, addictions, and illnesses. So this group, the Housing Justice Project, is working on a Housing Justice Day, which is coming up in a couple weeks, Friday the 22nd, at the legislature from noon to 2. And they've been encouraging people who are experiencing homelessness to come with them and lend their voice to the effort of what they've been working on. organizers reached out to me to see if we might be able to help with food. It's a very practical thing. And you know, my first response was, well, feeding the hungry is something that we know a little bit about. And so I'll see what I can do, is basically what I said. So today's sermon comes with a direct call to action for you here at St. Philip's. We are being asked to bring coffee and baked goods to the Ledge Grounds on Friday the 22nd to help share with people who come there. I think I'll work on the coffee, but if any of you are willing to accommodate this request, I'm sure we've got some bakers here today. Catch me after the service and we'll make a plan. Probably it will work best to drop them off at the Synod office and I'll bring them down. But, I heard a quotation yesterday at a conference I was at from David Augsburger, who said that being heard is so close to being loved that for the average person they are almost indistinguishable. Being heard is so close to being loved that for the average person, they are almost indistinguishable. On the 22nd, I'm going to go down to the Ledge Grounds, and I hope to hear. I'm going to try to listen, not only to the work that this group has been doing, but if there's other neighbors who are there on that day as well. And I think, and I hope, as this passage invites us today, to leave that encounter with a new way